Davis Van Opdorp here with Felix Tomczyk. A great game between Borussia Mönchengladbach and Leipzig this weekend, and a Ruhr derby that's going to be coming up next weekend. We're going to talk about both of those topics, but we have two in the stadium pieces this week for you. Matt Ford was in Düsseldorf for the Düsseldorf Mainz game. But to start, Felix was in Bremen to witness one of the many fan protests throughout the league. So Felix Tomczyk is here with me in the studio. He was in Bremen over the weekend for the Bayern Munich-Bremen game. It was one of the locations where these protests against fan-unfriendly match times, that's what it was about, right? Fan-unfriendly match times. It was one of the stadiums where it took place. Is there anything else you wanted to precursor before we play it?
Yeah, basically a protest that took place nationwide across Germany's leagues. It took German football by storm, basically. Almost every single set of fans took part. And yeah, I think the recording sort of reflects what happened over the weekend.
Yep, so here is this stuff from Bremen. Take a listen.
Felix Tomczyk here with Leonard, Werder Bremen fan, before the game against Bayern München, which is bound to be an interesting game, but there's the one small slash big minus that the fans will be protesting at the beginning of the game. There will be practically no atmosphere whatsoever. Let's start with the football, Leonard. What are you expecting from today? Spirits are high, spirits are low. Just general impressions about the football.
I'm really optimistic for this game. I mean, we haven't beaten Bayern here at home for over 10 years, and I'm usually optimistic, but this season I really think we have a chance of at least getting a draw, and we might beat them today.
What do you think is the impact of Florian Kohlsfeld's personality on the general optimism that is among Bremen fans right now?
So I think what he says really makes sense, and you don't feel like he's trying to avoid any question or not really answer things, so he always gets to the point, and that makes Bremen fans trust him and believe in what he says, that he's not playing with the fans, but that he's really honest in what he has to say.
Now let's talk a bit about the fan aspect of this game. When everybody talks about the fan protests that are set to take place this week, it's important to state we're not talking about, you're not an ultra, you're just a Bremen fan that goes to games. Many people are saying things like this is a protest that belongs to ultras. People are saying that the whole point of protesting against matches that are being separated to match days across the week is something that only involves ultras, and that's why they're protesting. Is it like an ultra protest, or do you feel like this is something that also quote-unquote regular fans can identify with?
I can fully identify with it. I mean, of course it was started by ultras, but that's also because it's for them it's easier to organize such a thing. But for me as a regular fan who doesn't live in Bremen, it's very difficult to go to a game if it's not on the weekend, so I have to travel here. And for example, next week when we have a Friday game, which is more accepted among fans, but I have a course in university until 7 o'clock, and I won't make it to the game. And this also affects me, so I support the protests, of course. And it's not only that the ultras do their thing and I watch it, but I support them.
From the impression you get, is it also the general consensus among match-going Bremen fans? There are not necessarily ultras, they are generally pro this whole protest?
I don't think so. So, I mean, I don't talk to that many fans out of my bubble. So in my bubble, I don't know many ultras, so it's more
but general from your
fans.
Bubble,
so from
people...
my bubble, most people support it. But I cannot say that I have the feeling that it's a broad support of the whole stadium, because I also think it's always a conflict between those who stand in the stadium and those who sit. Those people who sit usually have some little bit different opinion on things and are more in a consumer perspective when they go to a game, and not that much as active as those people who stand.
And one last thing, prediction?
I say we win.
Optimism.
3-1.
Very good. Yeah. I sense we're going this way.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So thank you very much, Leonard. And we'll see how the game goes.
Yeah.
Right, so I just made my way out of the Weserstadion. It was a weird game in terms of the atmosphere. The Germans have a better way of describing it. This word is komisch, I would say. And it was mostly down to the rather unsynchronized protests between the Bremen fans and the Bayern fans. Bayern fans were completely silent for 45 minutes. It wasn't in question. Even when they scored, their cheers were rather held back, I would say. With Bremen, because their ultras took a different approach to the whole protest thing, they returned to supporting their team after 20 minutes and 30 seconds, which got loud boos from the Bayern fans. Also, I have to say that in many instances, the regular quote-unquote Bremen fans hardly played along the boycott. They tried to get the atmosphere going. It didn't really work. Bayern fans booed them, and their boos were louder than the whole stadium, basically. It was just weird. In the beginning, it didn't feel like an actual football game. It just felt like a congregation of people that have feelings towards something. Whereas in the second half, once Bayern fans were back at it, it was okay again. It was good again. It felt natural again. It felt like a football game again. So whether the point has been made or not, I'm not entirely sure. I just think that the importance of organized support was made clear today. I think that, like one of Bremen's ultras told me before the game, we want to make it clear that that what the DFL perceives as their product, we're part of it and we're an important aspect of it, and without us they don't have that aspect. I think it was made clear today, but there's a but. That's the thing. Anyways, I'm gonna meet up with a group of Bremen fans and try the local schnapps, so wish me luck. And good night from Bremen, where Bayern Munich won away 2-1 in light of fan protests.
All right, that was Felix in Bremen. He is on the couch with me now in the studio. So what was it like to watch a football match where there was essentially no atmosphere, especially in a stadium like Werder Bremen, which is renowned for its atmosphere?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird at times. I mean, we have to be fair and say that despite the protests from both the away end and the lower part of the Ostkurve, there were some parts of the stadium or some areas of the stadium in which some fans tried to get the atmosphere going anyways. That did not really work out. In the first 5 minutes, it sort of did, but afterwards they went silent pretty quickly. And that, I think, just goes to show the importance of organized support in Germany nowadays. Because once there's no organized support, ultras groups are not doing, quote-unquote, their thing. There will be some people who will try to get the atmosphere going, sing, chant, but it will be disorganized. It will not have the same effect. And during those dead moments of the game, during the moments in which the team really needs that push, for instance, after Bayern scored their first goal, that was really, really noticeable. And that's why I think that despite the fact that Bremen might not have been the best example for the protest, it emphasized that point in a way that I think wasn't emphasizing any other ground in Germany over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, it's not like the game itself also warranted a major atmosphere, because at least for me on television, to me, it wasn't very entertaining. I thought that Joshua Kimmich in his midfield role was rather interesting. But again, it was kind of this sluggish win for Bayern Munich. And Werder Bremen has been struggling since their hot start. What did you make of the game from where you were in the stadium?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like a typical is maybe the wrong term to use given Bayern's recent run of form or the lack thereof. I think, generally speaking, it felt like the win that Bayern needed. It wasn't especially pretty, but it was certainly efficient. Bremen were putting up the pressure on them at times, and it looked like they deserved more out of this game, to be honest, from my view anyways. But at the end of the day, it was what you would expect from Bayern. And I think given, as you said, it wasn't the best football game we've watched this season, not even close. Yeah, the protests certainly stole the headlines in that sense. What I also found interesting to mention is that, like, people spoke a lot about Bremen fans and how they will react to this protest. I want to say a word about Bayern Munich fans.
Yeah, you tweeted this. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Bayern Munich fans get slated a lot by football fans across the footballing world, also in Germany, as many things. But when it comes to...
By the way, they get criticized for not providing the atmosphere in Allianz Arena that you would get normally in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, absolutely. People call them couch fans. People call them success fans. All sorts of names. But during that game, from a fan culture point of view, Bayern fans were absolutely brilliant. The first half was completely silent on their behalf because of the protests. They had protest banners all around the block. And when the small part of Bremen's fans tried to get the atmosphere going, they booed them in a way that really shut them down. In the second half, their support was really, really good. They got behind their team, constantly singing. It was really, really great to see. And I think they deserve lots of credit for that. Bayern's away support has been very, very, very good this weekend. Also from a fan culture point of view, really, really good job.
Yeah. You also have to consider the fact that, there were still fans in Bremen, even though their AGM was this weekend. It wasn't. I don't know exactly when the AGM took place, but it seemed like it happened at the same time as the Werder Bremen game, which was clearly an interesting time to do it. I mean, on Bayern Munich standard, maybe it was done that way on purpose because there was a lot of fans at the annual general meeting. That happens for many clubs in Germany. There was a lot of fans there that really went after the Bayern Munich brass. I mean, Uli Hoeneß specifically whether it was the Super League, whether it was the press conference a month ago or a couple of months ago now, and they really went after them.
Everything that happened with Paul Breitner was a
that too. Yeah, sorry,
piece.
Even Paul Breitner getting banned from Bayern Munich games.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the events in that Mitgliedversammlung, as they call it in German, like member meeting, it was very interesting to see. Uli Hoeneß was booed on numerous occasions. There were North Korean flags with the words "Not my president" on them. Afterwards, Uli Hoeneß was asked by some of the journalists there, and he said that. He certainly, it got to him. Like those were his words. And I think that just goes to show what the atmosphere at Bayern Munich is like at the moment.
Yeah. You do not see that. I remember when, at the AGM that happened right after these tax evasion accusations came out against Uli Hoeneß, mm-hmm. Uli Hoeneß got several standing ovations during that AGM. I mean, this is a guy that fans have historically loved, and even regardless of the crimes that he has committed, and yet at this one, when it affects the club specifically, perhaps they really took him to task. They really went after him, and it was a really stark contrast to see. I mean, it was only four or five years ago mm-hmm. when these accusations came out, and it was clear that Uli Hoeneß was going to have to serve prison time for these tax evasion charges. And I mean, and he was still revered as this big, larger than life, this larger than life character in the Bayern Munich circles that people still attributed to the recent success for Bayern Munich. Of course, that happened also after they won the treble. And yet to see the fans turn on him in that way at the AGM, and to see also, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of Bayern Munich members. They're not all going to go to Bremen. The fact that they didn't, the stadium, I think it was, they did it in the Audi Dome in Munich, that it was relatively empty too. That was also really shocking to see. That AGM for Bayern Munich, I think, is something that is just so out of the ordinary for that club, which, like you said, just shows how much turmoil that club is currently going through right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you got it spot on with saying that Uli Hoeneß received this larger-than-life treatment. That's a very good term. I think, in a way, Uli Hoeneß, it seems that, I obviously don't know, but it seems like he has the feeling of being able to get away with anything. I think once it got to the club itself and what fans see as hurting the club's core principles, that's where I think the problem started. I think that clash between Uli Hoeneß and Paul Breitner, a club legend by any terms. I mean, Paul Breitner is a big, big name for Bayern Munich fans. And that clash, especially because of that criticism of Paul Breitner in regards to that famous press conference, that just basically forced the fans to choose sides. And they did, in many terms. And that side was Paul Breitner's side. And many of us would sort of think, would put it this way, would understand why they did that. Because Uli Hoeneß basically used that, it fails that he used that larger-than-life character of his to do things that are also... You shouldn't do them also in the eyes of Bayern Munich fans. And again, it shows. I mean, the way he spoke after that press conference, the responses he gave to the media being asked about that Breitner thing. I think he said something along the lines of, Paul Breitner is actually not the victim here, he's actually the hurting side. And you think, what did he actually do to warrant that? He's a club legend. He can have criticism of the club. He didn't say anything out of the ordinary. Just to round it up, basically Paul Breitner said that once he watched this Bayern Munich press conference, he said that it showed weakness, and he could never believe that in his lifetime, Bayern Munich would show such weakness. Nothing out of the ordinary. I personally see it as a completely legitimate criticism, and even like even more low key than most criticisms heard over that Bayern Munich press conference. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it will develop with the Bayern Munich management. The January transfer window is upcoming. It's certainly going to be interesting.
Yeah, you really do wonder how what Uli Hoeneß can do in kind of a club. In a club situation, and in terms of what he can do for the first team, especially whether it's the transfer window, whether it's, like you said several times, trying to basically campaign on the fact that he's that they're going to spend big next summer, which I think a lot of people saw coming. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does. There's one other point that I wanted to get to before we moved on, which is Arjen Robben announcing his retirement. Mm-hmm. He said. He said basically this is going to be his last season. It's not retirement's not the right word. It's going to be his last season at Bayern Munich. He said in the past that he might go back to Groningen in the Eredivisie, which is where he started his career. I think that would be a very interesting move for him. I mean, he's definitely one of those candidates that could go to China or go to the United States. I don't know what he could do. I don't know where his personal interests lie in that circumstance. But I mean, this is we've talked about the end of the Arjen Robben, Frank Ribery, the robbery area at Bayern Munich. Is this a good sign now that Arjen Robben is kind of try to get in front. It seemed like he was trying to get in front of the story, because he has not looked as good at this season as he has in years past. I mean, Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben are coming up at the end of their contracts again. They would have to get 1 year extensions or get extensions of some kind to continue working at Bayern Munich. What did you think of Arjen Robben's announcement?
I thought it was respectable. I thought the timing was right, especially with all the turmoil around the club. Robben's announcement, I thought he came out the quote-unquote bigger man, as if to say, listen, I understand the club needs transition. I understand that my age, that I'm not getting younger, basically. And I think it's time for the club to move on. And I think in the eyes of many Bayern fans I spoke to, all of them say, yeah, we saw it coming. It wasn't something unexpected. But at the end of the day, the fact that he came out and said, listen, I understand the club needs change. I'm not part of the future of the club. My age is rather advanced for a professional footballer. I'll move on. And I think that just sort of frames him in that place of the club legend that he really is at Bayern. I mean, I saw many people saying that he's Bayern's most legendary player in the last 10 years. I'm not sure if that's correct, given that you have the Lahms and the Schweinsteigers, etc. But he's certainly up there. And that the way he announced that he's going to leave the club at the end of the season just sort of puts that last stamp on his status in the eyes of many Bayern fans. And fair play to him. He had a fantastic career at Bayern. He's a player that I think we all going to remember for what he gave to Bayern. Again, the way he announced it, his departure from Bayern, it was just part of the same, let's call it, honorable route that he had at Bayern Munich. And well done, Arjen. We're going to miss you. And best of luck back in Holland, the US, wherever that is.
All right, so let's move on to some other Bundesliga action. It wasn't the best match day if you were looking for a spectacular match of some kind. But there was one that I thought was really interesting in terms of the teams involved and in terms of the way that the game played out, which was Borussia Mönchengladbach's game against Leipzig. Now, it was a sloppy game. It was raining in Leipzig pretty hard at the time. Timo Werner scored two first-half goals, one in the third minute and one in first-half stoppage time. Mm-hmm. It was a big win for Leipzig, especially in the fact that their Europa League campaign looks to be near an end, especially if Celtic beat Red Bull Salzburg in the final match day in a week and a half. And it was kind of a result that Leipzig needed, wasn't it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I think generally speaking, Leipzig's results in the Bundesliga are currently, their run of form is very, very impressive. Their Europa League campaign so far hasn't affected their league form. And that continues to be the case. And I think, as you mentioned, it was a very important win in that fight for a Champions League place. The way that RB Leipzig played that game, the way they operated their very famous breaking tactics and the very famous quick plays, it was very, very impressive to see. The likes of Werner and Sabitzer just did whatever they wanted. Their speed is phenomenal. At times it was great to see. What I also found interesting is that during many parts of this season, basically Gladbach's attack showed that it could basically do the same thing with the likes of Hazard. But I don't think
Hazard and Playa and Florian Neuhaus and Jonas Hoffmann, all of these names that we said a couple of weeks ago when we were breaking these teams down.
Absolutely. But they couldn't out Leipzig in that sense. I think
not in Red Bull Arena either.
No. Red Bull did its thing at home. I think they haven't conceded for seven home games this season already, which is absolutely brilliant. People keep talking about their attacking abilities and the way they get the ball from defense to attack very, very quickly. But their defense has been sublime this season.
Yeah, their defense, it's interesting because they've recruited these young defenders. Obviously, one can say that they've done it in a kind of a shady way by taking in players from Salzburg.
As per usual.
But I mean, they also got Ibrahima Konate. I'm not sure where he came from. I don't remember exactly where he came from, but basically they got him last year, and also a teenager. And the two of them, I mean, together, they haven't played that much together because you have the likes of Willy Orban or Stefan Helsanker, who are a little bit more experienced and sometimes Leipzig have needed that experience. But the two of them together are perhaps the most, I would even say, definitively the most athletic pair of center backs the Bundesliga has to offer, and perhaps one of the most athletic pairs of central defenders in Europe's top five leagues. I don't think it's in terms of athleticism specifically. I think that they are just on another level. I remember just seeing Konate just catching up with Torgan Hazard and pushing him off the ball out for a throw. And I mean, it's just like, it's just a small play, but the fact that Torgan Hazard cannot get away from a center back like Ibrahima Konate is just incredible how athletic these guys are. And it was really on display, and especially with a game that was so sloppy, where the margins were a little bit harder for Gladbach to attain just because the conditions didn't agree with them. The fact that both of those center defenders took advantage of that in a big Bundesliga game too. These are 3 points for Leipzig that could be the difference between them making the Champions League and them not. So I mean the fact that the two of them came up big in that circumstance was really impressive to me.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, their defensive ability is something of a revelation this season. When it comes to, we got to say they had a bit of luck as well, because we remember those two chances that I think Stindl had towards the end.
Right, yeah.
Torgan Hazard had a good chance also. But at the end of the day, when you're executing your playing theory, if you will, so well.
I mean, and you're just your basics too.
Exactly. You do the basics so well, and you have two players like Konate and Upamecano in the center of defense. They are doing things so well, so athletic, so quick, that fit the general way of play also. It just works, and it was really refreshing to see their defensive abilities in addition to those storming attacks that we all know. We spoke about it the other week here at the podcast, and my question was whether they'll be able to keep up with it. At the moment, it seems like they are keeping up with it, and if they'll keep on going, then I think they can easily talk of Champions League qualification. Yes, the winter pause is coming, which means that might be interfered by the fact that football won't be played in this country until the end of January. But as things look at the moment, they look good and they look well set. Whether it's going to continue, that remains to be seen. In addition to that, as you said, their Europa League qualifications seemed like the chances of them qualifying to the next round, it doesn't seem super likely at the moment.
Well, let me ask you about that, because there was a clear intention to try to make it to the group stages. There have been intentions. I mean, that intention has not been there from German clubs that have been in Europa League qualifying before. I think Hertha Berlin essentially used their Europa League qualification 2 years ago as kind of an extra preseason. Freiburg, I think, did the same thing. They weren't really that heartbroken.
Team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they weren't very heartbroken that they didn't make the Europa League group stage. But for Leipzig, as a team that is kind of trying to establish itself as a European power, they went through the 6 games of qualification they've had to. They're going to play 12 Europa League games, even if they don't make the knockout stages. But is it a good thing that they're not going that there is a good chance of them not qualifying for the round of 32 in the Europa League?
I think Well, if you look at how they're playing, like the differences between their ability in the league and their ability in Europa League, you see that they managed to make that separation. Like, you can't say that they're not so good ability during Europa League matches has really affected their league form. It hasn't, because in the league they're basically in, as people said, they're acing it. They're playing super well, attacking football, fun football, barely conceding at home against, without conceding 7 matches now. They're doing things right in the league, and given that separation was made already, and we see it's being made well, I'm not sure it's gonna put their spirits down or anything along those lines. I think in terms of how their squad is planned, in terms of how of the players they have in the squad, it just means they'll have the ability to focus elsewhere, and that elsewhere is the Bundesliga.
Yeah, we've talked about it with Gladbach, the fact that they have the advantage of not having to play in any other competition for the rest of the season except for the Bundesliga. I mean, they're already out of the German Cup. They are not in Europe this year for the first time, or once again after not qualifying for Europe the past couple of seasons. I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that they're in second place is not just due to the fact that they have been impressive, but also due to the fact that they can use their best players week in and week out in the Bundesliga. That hasn't really been the case for Leipzig. I mean, they have tried to use. I mean, Ralf Rangnick has rotated a lot, and he has used his better players in the Bundesliga rather than the Europa League. But he still has to use. I mean, he still has to field a squad of some kind in the Europa League. So. Considering the fact that one of the teams that you're battling with is Gladbach, and Frankfurt for that matter. I mean, they're into the knockout stages of the Europa League, but who knows how long their Europa League campaign is going to last? I mean, by the end of the season, on all those teams could unless Frankfurt basically make a really long Europa League run, the teams that Leipzig are competing with, they're not going to be in Europe. Come the end of the season when things get really, really tight. Mm-hmm. And also, you can consider that a team like Hoffenheim, who is not very far off the pace either, or who are they're currently in the bottom of their group in the Champions League, they might not even make it to the Europa League from that third place spot in the Champions League. So that's another team that is going to not have the quote-unquote distraction of a European competition. So it's... it might be a good thing that Leipzig is not going to be in the Europa League anymore, especially since with Nagelsmann coming next season, it has been made somewhat official, but it's basically assumed that he's coming. That they need to be in the Champions League in order for Julian Nagelsmann to begin the project that he wants to begin at Leipzig. So. I think that the Europa League is I think for them, maybe for a team like Frankfurt, it means a little bit more. I mean, you see the attendance figures that they have in the Europa League,
the choreographies too are
insane. But Leipzig don't have that, and it's not necessarily an advantage for them to play in the Europa League.
No, I don't think their fans really care. I mean, they do care. Every fan cares about their team playing European football, but I think. You see the difference in approaches between Eintracht Frankfurt fans and RB Leipzig, and that says it all, I think. That says everything you need to know.
Since the Ruhr Derby is next week, we thought it would be a good time to also take stock of Borussia Dortmund. Once again, we've done that a bunch of times this season, but also take stock of Schalke and kind of take a look at where these two teams are this season. They're in very different positions this season than they were last season. Schalke has spent most of the season ahead of Borussia Dortmund. I think by the time that they played each other last year, I believe that they were not above Dortmund at the moment, but that 4-4 draw.
I think it was the second game that of Dortmund's like really bad run with Bosch.
Right. So yeah, because Dortmund got off to that hot start, they still had the better table position at the time, I believe. It's completely different now. Borussia Dortmund are. They're the best team in the Bundesliga. It's undisputed as well. It's not like they've had an incredible run of form that's not sustainable. They have proven under Lucien Favre that they can sustain this. So from a Dortmund perspective, is this something? This is a really good position for them going into the Ruhr Derby.
Absolutely. I think Dortmund are the favorites. I don't think there's any question about that. Dortmund have been playing brilliant football. I mean, there's no need to say more about that. I think we've spoken about that so many times. But yeah, they're the favorites. They're coming as the confident team. When they played Freiburg over the weekend, they managed to win 2-0. It looked like an effortless win almost, like they weren't even in their top, in like their fifth gear, I would say maybe third, and they still managed to win effortlessly. Their attacking abilities this season have been nothing short of phenomenal, and it's going to be interesting to see how they'll handle that Schalke defense that Tedesco has been building from last season. Worked out so well for them last season, this season less so, but still, it's going to be a very interesting match.
Well, we also have to keep in mind that Schalke, at least at the beginning of last season, also was playing a lot against the ball, and this season they've kind of had to. Just based on their success from last season, teams have been more likely to let them try to do what they want to do rather than trying to get them to retreat and put them under a lot of attacking pressure and trying to get at them. There was points earlier in the season, especially with Mendil at left back, who was playing in his first Bundesliga season, Salif Sané, who doesn't have the rapport with this Schalke defense that other members of Schalke's defense have with each other. Especially on the break, that they really struggled. But for Dortmund this season, they have at times struggled to break teams down. You saw the game. I mean, you just look at the game against Club Brugge in the Champions League. Brugge didn't really have that much. They did have an attacking intent, but it really came against the run of play. They were really trying to huff the ball forward and getting the ball forward as quickly as possible when they got it. And Dortmund really struggled. I mean, Brugge stayed compact, and Dortmund really struggled to break them down. But I will say, I think what's in Dortmund's favor, especially in this game against Schalke, is that they still seem to move the ball quickly when they have to possess it, which is something that we haven't seen from Bayern Munich. That's something that we haven't seen from other top teams around Europe, quite frankly. Even though Bruges was staying so compact in midweek, they were still switching the play, trying to get something done. And if Christian Pulisic and Marco Reus had been more clinical at midweek, they may have stayed perfect or they may have remained top in their Champions League group. And I think the fact that Schalke's defense also has some sluggish players in it, especially near the back. I think that's something that Borussia Dortmund could really take advantage of in this game.
Absolutely. I think some of the examples from the Hoffenheim game could really show what we can expect from the Borussia Dortmund game. Hoffenheim, basically, it was pretty clear that Julian Nagelsmann told his player to do exactly what you said. Just press them on. Go at Schalke defenders and let them have the ball. I mean, at the end of the day, you'll get the ball, and that's exactly what happened. There were quite a few instances in which Schalke's defenders and midfielders lost the ball and gave Hoffenheim the chance of making things happen. Especially in the first half, there were at least three instances in which this really, really intensive pressure resulted in Hoffenheim having a really good goal-scoring opportunity. And I think Dortmund are a team that can do it even better than Hoffenheim, given the firepower that they have. So that's what we're expecting to see. I don't think that Schalke will necessarily have the ball in this game. But I think that's also smart of Dortmund not to let them have the ball. First of all, because they're so good with it. And second of all, because even when you let Schalke try to hit Dortmund on the break, the speed in Schalke's attack, apart from Konoplyanka, who's relatively quick, you don't get that sort of Sancho-esque speed or Hakimi-esque speed that you see at Dortmund. So that's certainly something that Dortmund can use against Schalke, and I personally think that's what's going to cost Schalke the game at the end of the day.
Do you see? I mean, obviously they're at two different points of the table. I mean, Schalke is below mid-table in the lower half of the table, coming into this match, and Borussia Dortmund obviously are at the top. But Schalke is still playing at home. Is there a scenario that you see Schalke getting a win in this game?
I mean, it's a derby.
Or maybe even a result.
I mean, it's a derby. I mean, with the backing of the Nordkurve, it's anything can happen theoretically. That's why derbies are what they are. But looking at it from a purely footballing point of view, it seems very hard to see how Schalke can take anything from that game. Maybe trying to take the Bruges approach to it. Maybe trying to play more defensive football. That Tedesco is a coach that knows how to play defensive football, as we've seen in large parts of last season. But I personally don't think that's gonna work against such an effective Dortmund side, such a quick Dortmund side, a side that knows how to break defenses for the most part. I think the two instances in which it didn't really work were, as you mentioned, Bruges. Like in the beginning of the season, we had Hannover away that they
couldn't
really score.
Right, yeah, that's another good example.
But at the end of the day, Dortmund, for the most part, again, adding maybe the Atletico Madrid match to that away, they get the result they need. And they get it while playing really, really good attacking quick football. Yeah. And I personally don't see how Schalke's defense can sort of defend against that.
Yeah, I think the only chance I think that Schalke has, I mean, is on the break. I mean, last season they had the most goals by long passes. Guido Bergstock is more technically gifted than I think a lot of people give him credit for. You could see him goading someone like Dan Axel Zagadou into a mistake, or at least into maybe a penalty. But I mean, at the same time, you also have to keep in mind too that Schalke's attack is also just ravaged by injuries right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were starting Haji Wright at the weekend, and as an American, I'm really proud that he's gotten a chance in the first team. But I mean, really, that's really how dire it's gotten. Because, it's when you don't have someone like Mark Uth, who the step down from Mark Uth to Haji Wright is, I think, bigger than a lot of Americans would definitely admit. But I think it's even with Mark Uth's struggles, he was still providing something in the penalty area. So I think that this might be the game that Schalke's lack of striker depth at the moment may rear its head.
That's a good point. I do think that you mentioned Burgstaller. Burgstaller is exactly the striker that fans like and opposition fans hate, in the sense that he can really, really annoy defenders. Even I personally don't think he's that gifted technically, but in games in which the emotion controls rather than the football, Guido Burgstaller could be a big asset. We could see it like in the 4-4 last season, the derby at the Westfalenstadion. That was one of those games in which Guido Burgstaller really got stuck in and did his thing. By the way,
speaking of that game, Naldo is also having fitness issues at the moment too. So, I mean, he's not going to provide the late equalizing header from a corner that he did last season.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a very different Schalke defense in that sense. Given that Naldo goal, that will also affect Schalke's attacking abilities. Which is good for me because I'm going to the game with Dortmund fans, so hoping it'll be fun. But other than that, looking at it from a purely footballing perspective, I genuinely don't see how Schalke, again, apart from playing long balls and staying back and playing the sort of defensive brand of football that sort of made Tedesco... that Tedesco proved that he can get his team to play at times. But Dortmund are just it looks like they're too good at the moment. I'll just, with all the speculations and with all the professional analysis we can make, the bottom line is that Dortmund right now are one of the best teams in Europe. Schalke are a mid-table team at best in the Bundesliga. And how will that come into effect remains to be seen.
So Matt Ford couldn't be in the studio this week, but he did record something from Düsseldorf, where Fortuna lost 1-0 to Mainz. Take a listen.
Match day 13 in the Bundesliga. It's Friday night, and we are just walking down the road towards the stadium in Düsseldorf. It's Fortuna Düsseldorf against FSV Mainz 05 to start off match day 13. I'm with a hardcore Fortuna Düsseldorf supporter with Dirk. I've been watching Düsseldorf for quite a few years. I'll leave it to Dirk just to introduce yourself, maybe.
Yeah, my name is Dirk. I'm 54 and I'm going to games from Fortuna since 1972. It was my first game, and I traveled up and down the country to watch the games, and went down with the club down to the fourth league, to the regional league, and back up in the first division. And I also was a witness of the glory old days when we had two cup wins in the late 70s, and we are now back in the first division in the Bundesliga, and the season is not running well at the moment, but the performance is always very good of the team.
You say the season's not going well. I think I disagree slightly. There's been some ups and downs. The past two games, in particular, have been really, really good for Düsseldorf. A 4-1 win at home to Hertha Berlin, and then that incredible comeback last week away at Bayern Munich. It's not all bad, is it?
It's not all bad, that's true. Hertha Berlin, we were lucky because they were down to 10 men just before half-time. And so it was the kickoff for a good game in the second half. Munich was brilliant because nobody expected us to come back, and it was very, very good to have Luca Bacchio in the team, who is on loan from Watford, and we are all very sad because it's not possible to have him here over the season, because there's a strictly contract that he has to go back. The club is now doing and trying everything to take contact with Watford to have a chance maybe to have him one more year here, or to have another option to get him here for longer.
But for that, Düsseldorf will have to stay in the Bundesliga to have any chance of that.
Yes, that's the other thing. To have a real option to get him here again, or to stay him here, we need to stay in the first division in the Bundesliga. So it's difficult at the moment because we are second of the bottom, and you're not sure at the moment what the rest of the season will bring us or what the result will be. So we have to see and take every chance we can have to have him here for a longer time.
The last time I was here in Düsseldorf was for the game against Schalke. I think you were on the podcast very, very briefly after the game, but you weren't in much of a mood to talk because it was a disappointing performance. A goal right after half time, I think two goals right after half time, if I remember correctly.
Yes,
for Schalke. A disappointing home result. However, can you describe maybe what the atmosphere has been like at Düsseldorf games this year? At the Schalke game, there was a huge choreography, a huge circus choreography around the whole stadium. Do you feel like the whole city in Düsseldorf is getting behind Fortuna? And what's the atmosphere like?
This season, the atmosphere is a bit lower than the last time when we were up in the Bundesliga. It has many reasons why it's more low, because last time when we were up in the Bundesliga, it was very unexpected, and this time it's nothing new for us. So nothing new for the city. Last time the whole city was involved in everything. And this season, it's like a bit of a normal status. So people expect much more. And we only have games like versus Schalke, Dortmund, Cologne, Mönchengladbach, which are our local rivals.
Well, not which Cologne.
Not Cologne. Yeah, maybe in the cup. So only the the matches in Düsseldorf, which bring us local rivals, are very popular. And this is not a question of the division. This is just a question of the rivality in the normal life. All the other games, it has only average. And so if you have average crowd in Düsseldorf, the atmosphere is low.
Speaking of rivalries, a big game for Düsseldorf recently was the away match away at Borussia Mönchengladbach. All the Düsseldorf fans in red jackets, lots of flares and pyrotechnics in the away end, perhaps too much. I think some of the players were saying, lads, time to stop that now, we have a football match to play. What's the rivalry like between Düsseldorf and Gladbach? Are they a bigger rival than Cologne, or are Cologne the biggest rival?
Yeah, it changed from the past to the present, because in the past the biggest rival was Cologne. It's still the biggest rival. But now the rivals between Mönchengladbach and Cologne are much bigger, because they played against each other each year, and we are off in the second division, and it's just rebuilt a little bit and is trying to get refixed like it was in the past. But the biggest rival for us are always Cologne, Mönchengladbach, Bochum, Duisburg, sometimes smaller clubs which are next to us like Uerdingen. Sometimes it's Munich, but more the old one, the 1860 Munich club. But this depends also in the table position during the season. So Frankfurt is another big one, but depends also on which day the match is taking place. It's a weekday, it's a weekend. So many details giving it to result or not.
Tonight, Düsseldorf are playing Mainz. Yeah. Is there any particular rivalry between Düsseldorf and Mainz?
No.
They're not too far apart geographically?
No. No rivality I know. There's just a football game.
Just a football game. That's good. We'll be looking forward to that, obviously. I want to talk about a slightly different subject, because we've all met up in a shop/pub this evening. That's because you're quite heavily involved, and you have been for a few years, in the casual scene over here in Düsseldorf. Maybe you could say a few words about how that's come about, and maybe a little bit about how big the casual scene is in Germany, because I think it's quite well known in England, for example, but maybe I'm wrong, maybe not as well, maybe not as widespread in Germany.
The casual scene is traditionally in Germany spread only in cities which have a link with England, which are Munich, Düsseldorf, Cologne, maybe Hamburg, which is also influenced from the Scandinavian scene. But Düsseldorf and Munich as well have traditionally a big casual scene, because the football culture in the 80s was really built up. And so the casual scene here is very popular. And I think it's true if I say Düsseldorf has a very true casual scene. Yeah. Not very big, but very solid.
Tonight, when we all met up in the pub earlier, there were fans from different clubs around England and different clubs around Germany. How do all these connections come together?
Yes, these are all guys aged in the 40s or 50s. And for us, the real football, like we know it from the 80s, is gone. And so we regularly meet one time a year or two times a year just to meet up and to talk about the past and to share some stories from the old days. And it's just a meet up to live our culture.
Brilliant. Well, yeah, thanks for the explanation, Dirk. Finally, just before we're just getting to the stadium now. We are really early. I can't remember the last time I got to a stadium this early. But it means we can get away from the checks quite quickly. I think the entrance checks are quite difficult at Düsseldorf, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a new football, the football of the new generation, and that means checks everywhere.
So yeah, if you do come to Düsseldorf watching a game, I would also advise getting to the ground. Maybe not 2.5 hours before kickoff, but maybe 1 hour before kickoff, and get through the checks. And of course, you can always get an Altbier inside the ground, which is what we're going to do now. Dirk, or a Bockwurst or a sausage. We'll see how it goes.
That was Matt Ford in Düsseldorf, and that'll do it for this week's edition of the Tribuna Weekly. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please, please, please leave us a friendly review. Felix Thompson is on Twitter at FThompson, Matt Ford at Matt_4D. And remember, they're in the stadium almost every single weekend. So check out their timelines every week to see where they are. And you too could talk on the podcast. I'm at Davis_VanOpdorp. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.